You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Welcome back to Mom is Talking Loud. This is part two of our special episode with Neely Bassman and Haven Burton. Just a reminder, we are talking about being mother to children with special needs. And if this is a topic that is sensitive to you, you might just want to listen with a little care. This is Jessica Rush.
And I'm Kara Cooper. Thanks so much for tuning in. So while we were going through all of this, Denny and I really like each other. And I had the bright idea to make margaritas one night before he came home, and we got pregnant. So while we're going through all of this, we have Caspian, who's just developing wonderfully and sleeping and just being very easy and wonderful. And then we got pregnant, and it was not planned, and I had just gone back to work after having Caspian, and it was only, 8 months after I had had him, and I was just starting to think of like, oh, I'll start auditioning, I'll get back into the workforce, I'll be doing this again. Just kidding, you're pregnant again. I won't say it was a wanted pregnancy, because I would be lying if I said that. It was really hard. I had to call my best friend and cry for like 3 hours with her on the phone. And because I felt guilty about feeling this way, of too, course, because yep. Like it's a baby. I love babies. I love my babies. So I was really happy that I was given this gift. But at the same time, I was...
Wasn't how you were envisioning.
Right, no, and I didn't know what my future was going to be. I thought, there goes my career. There goes everything that I've worked so hard to get back to after having two kids, which, as you all know, is not easy. Yeah.
Well, and in the midst of the turmoil of the moving and with Hudson and what you guys were going through.
It was nuts. And without having a community yet either. We were just doing it alone. Yeah. So it was the week before Christmas, and we went to the mall to get the kids their Santa pictures. And while we were sitting, in the mall, which is beautiful, and my parents were there, and they were leaving that afternoon. It was a really nice moment. I get the call from the genetics counselor who was calling from the hospital we were going to deliver at. And she had my genetics results, and she gave me the diagnosis over the phone that the baby had trisomy 21. And all the statistics around that, the numbers, how positive they were that this was definitely going to happen. And then, I went on a spiral of, well, what's the marker? What's the margin where she wouldn't have, where the baby wouldn't have, Down syndrome? What can I do in my mind to negotiate the fact that nothing's going to be wrong with my baby? She had had a couple of different things. She also had fluid around her lung that resolved. And I remember at the ultrasound, at the 12-week ultrasound, the doctor looked at me and said, "This is a perfectly healthy baby."
They said the same thing to me.
Perfectly healthy baby. And so...
And they were.
And they were. They absolutely were. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. But I remember thinking in my head, I don't know why I was so nervous through that pregnancy. I was nervous that something was kind of... That I was always waiting for the other shoe to drop in one way. And then we got the diagnosis and... I fell to pieces in the mall and sat down at the end of it. And I said, but what are we having? And she said, "It's a little girl." And I lost it because I have two boys and all I want to do is braid someone's hair. So we went home and I had a real bad day that turned into a really good day because I called Neely. Like immediately.
I will never forget that phone call.
Denny reached out and we called and we talked and I was like, "What am I do?" And you said, "You just, congratulations, you're having a little girl." And it really changed the narrative for me. And I still have all of these ridiculous, like naive, ignorant fears that pop up from time to time. And I get so angry at myself for them because as much as you put yourself into the community and see all of the positive stories, the other part of being in the community is seeing all of the pain that some of the parents are going through and feeling so scared for them and for your own family too. So, you know, because with Down syndrome, there can also be a lot of, there can be a lot of health issues. During the pregnancy, we had a diagnosis of ASD and VSD, which are two very different and difficult heart defects. They were measurable. They were moderate. The ASD quickly resolved, but the VSD was moderate and was growing. And so we were talking to her pediatric cardiologist about open heart surgery at 2 months. And I had had a friend that had a baby with Down syndrome that lost their baby at 6 months because of open heart surgery and the flu season being a terrible combination. And I was filled with fear. I could not sleep. I couldn't get over it. I didn't know if I could handle all of that loss, yeah. You know, and it was a very difficult and dark time, but I was also still really enjoying my pregnancy. So she was growing, even with the heart defects, she was thriving, she was doing really well. Anyway, she was born, she was absolutely beautiful. It was one of my favorite births. She came out immediately and all those things that I had wanted, I felt immediately with her. And, I only got to hold her for 20 minutes that day. So she wasn't stable. Her heart valves hadn't closed all the way. So she was desatting and her oxygen levels weren't, you know, holding and she couldn't keep her temperature up. So she had to be under warmers and she was in the NICU for 13 days. And so I was discharged and having to go back and forth to the NICU and home to care for my other two kids. And it was challenging, but you know what? It was beautiful. And looking back on it, I don't have any negative feelings at all. I look back on it and I'm happy that I had that moment during my pregnancy to grieve. Because there is a grieving process with children with special needs. And I don't mean to say that in such a, like, I don't mean it to sound negative. It's actually, you have to go through it, and it's really beautiful at the other end of it. You know,
it is, and as someone who has a child that's a little bit older, I grieve repeatedly mm-hmm. over different experiences. I yep. think because you have, it's managing expectations versus reality, right? Mm-hmm. And it's getting a lot easier, and my expectations are a lot different, but there are different moments that I grieve again, mm-hmm. and it's easier. I feel like I go through it more quickly. Because I would say the first grieving process was, I mean, and also I am going to therapy this year. Like yeah. I've got to just, I want to deal with it more head on and really get it out there. So all our listeners, hold me accountable, okay? I'm sorry to cut you off, but no, it is a grieving process.
Well, and the reason I was able to say congratulations, you're having a baby girl, is because I went through my grieving process. I remember telling my friends, and some of them, you know, I would give the news, Ever has Down syndrome, and some of them said, and? Okay. Well, thank God she's your kid then. And
oh,
I would get, no, in a good way. Oh, saying okay. Like, how lucky she is that she's with
because you're so, yes.
Oh, yes.
No, I didn't even set up my, oh God, that came out wrong. But my reaction to that, I would get so angry because I was like, did you hear what I said? Do you understand what I'm saying? And why aren't you upset for me? And now I'm so embarrassed that I had all those feelings, but I hadn't gone through the process. Mm-hmm. And now I understand what they were saying. And I have a gift, you know, and so I was coming from that place of having been through it to be able to tell you that. And also to be able to let you know that I know where you are and you're not going to be there before you know it. You're going to get through it and come out into a beautiful place, which you did more quickly than, you blew me away.
I think it's because for whatever reason that all of the events unfolded the way that they did, which is like this saga of my, like this 2-year period of my life that I still look back and just, there's such a large question mark as to like, why? Why did it all have to happen? But I think it really happened for a reason, and it primed me and Denny in our relationship. It tested us early on to be able to be strong for each other and for our kids. And we had Nova was not on the docket, you know, and we had not only was she not on the docket, Nova, who she is, was not on it. So we, you know, it was, I think because of everything that we had gone through with Hudson and the way that we had grieved and learned how to advocate for him, when Down syndrome came along, we were like, got it.
Yeah.
Cool. Fine. You know, but that's not, even I've been trying, and I'm also trying to stay positive too, like with everything, you know, everyone's like, don't measure her development with any other baby, especially your last two. And that's so easy to say, and it's so difficult to practice. And even when you practice it daily, like emotionally, physically, I say everything out loud now. I sound like a crazy person, but I have to say it. And even with Denny the other night, I said, I'm having a really hard time because she's going to be 7 months and she's not sitting unassisted. And, you know, she's doing so good, right? She's blowing everybody's expectations out of the water. And yet I still get caught up in that wheel of, oh, this is what our life is.
Yep. And it is.
Mm-hmm. And it is.
And that, I think, was one of the hardest things to come to terms with is I think when Elon was really young, I was like, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to fix it. You know,
that's
what I mean?
Who you are too, though. You're very.
Yeah, I'm like, well, let's do this. Let's do it. Let's fix it. And it's not something to be fixed, first of all. And it's not something that you like wrap up with a bow and say, okay, I did that. It is ongoing and never ending and ever changing. The thing you said about, I can't imagine having kids before Elon to compare development to, because for me, I had to like take myself off of social media because I kept looking at all these kids that babies that were born at the same time as Elon and parents joyfully posting videos and photos of them. And I don't begrudge them that at all. Like I do that with my children too, but I couldn't look and see how my child was not there. And something that I still have a hard time with is when people say, and it's not malicious, but it's just from lack of experience. But when people say, well, no one's kids goes to college in diapers, like when you're potty training your child. Potty training a child's special needs is like it is a thing, and it is so difficult. And anytime someone kind of says, well, they're going to walk eventually, or, you know, or just kind of throws out a quip about milestones. It's not that they don't know, but it got me every time. And it still does. Yeah. It still does. Like I don't, just because there are some people out there that are working so hard to get their child to every milestone mm-hmm. that your child is going to come to naturally, mm-hmm. you know, and our children are getting there, obviously, right? Mm-hmm. And there are some people listening to this whose children may not be getting there. And it's just, I guess it just informs the way I interact with the world, right? Mm-hmm. And trying to be more careful with the things that I say. Not that I, like I said, I don't find fault in anybody who says that, but I had a really hard time with the milestones.
One of the gifts too that, you know, having a kid that needs extra help has given me is you appreciate everything that other parents, and again, not in a malicious way, they just take for granted because you don't know any better. I wouldn't have known any better. I will never forget a day sitting in the library in Inwood and watching all these little babies at story time. And there was a dad there with his baby who was probably 7 months old maybe, and just sitting and reached over to grab a toy, put his hand down to support him and reached across his body with his other hand, picked up the toy. And the dad was just like, oh, hey, you got a toy.
He crossed
and
the midline.
Started
He's
crying. Crying
his body.
I was like, do you see what that baby just did? That's a miracle. I mean, I worked for 18 months daily to get my daughter to be able to do that. And she does it like nothing now. It's not, you know, whatever. But sitting in the moment, just watching that ridiculous little nothing of a movement, I was like, I looked at the dad, and obviously I didn't say anything. I would have been a crazy person. But I was like, that's miraculous. Yeah. What your baby just did, that's a miracle. And I am able to do that watching my son now, who is like Hudson was. Oh, I mean, no, he's riding God. A scooter
well,
when
he's
12
way,
like... months old. He's out of control, climbing, doing, speaking full sentences when he's 20 months old. But everything he does... my husband and I just look at each other and we're like, what?
Did you see that?
Did you see,
we did
did
the
you
same
see
thing.
That? Did you hear that? That's crazy. And half the time we're like, is that normal? Or is he a genius?
No, he's a genius. I have really, you know, like I remember being over having a play date with Elliot and Ever and mm-hmm. Tennyson started to go up
the stairs. Yeah.
And Neely looked at me and she's like, oh, wait, he's going up the stairs. I mean, he would have been really small at this
point.
Oh, he
was.
Yeah. And just completely.
I mean, like,
You were like, is this normal? Is this what he's supposed to do? You know, it's like, it's crazy.
I literally remember asking, it might have even been you. It was one of our neighborhood parents when Tennyson was like 4 months old. I remember asking, do I need to do stuff with him? Do I need, like, so that he'll sit up and crawl? Like, do I need to be doing things? Because I did so much with all the therapists every day for months and months and months. And the whoever the parent was it you, Jessica?
It might have been me on the
whoever it was was like, no, they just walk.
Well, I mean,
no, they just crawl.
And I mean, and that's something like you guys were saying. People say things and they don't mean them in malicious ways. Mm-hmm. If you're not aware of the struggles, and I have to say, like Kara, we've never really talked about this, but like, you know, I became well aware at one point that Elin was struggling, and this was before her diagnosis. But I knew Elin was behind and we were sharing the dressing room at the time. Mm-hmm. And there came a point where I consciously stopped talking about things Elliot was doing because I didn't want that to bring you, like, I don't know if you ever know, but I remember like getting to a point because Elliot's a year younger than Elin. And so as Elliot started to catch up with what she was doing and then surpass Elin, mm-hmm. I consciously sort of just brought it all in. Like I didn't say, I sort of was very conscious of what I would talk about in the dressing room or things I would do. And I remember after you had left the show on maternity leave with Finn, I was saying something one day or showed a video to Sarah and Sarah was like, I had no idea she was doing all that. And I said, well, I just didn't want, I wanted the space to be safe for Kara. I didn't want it to be a place where things
that was
could
so
be
kind
painful.
Of you to do that.
That's
and I feel
really
so
nice.
Badly that
no,
you
and
kept
I knew well, and that was Sarah and I had that same, but Sarah and I had that conversation too. And she was like, Kara would never have wanted you to do that. I was like, I know that, but I also know that her daily struggle is so much. And I don't want, you're my friend and I love you. And I never wanted to have it be I wanted you to have a space where you could breathe. You wouldn't have to think about it. You wouldn't have to do those things. So that was something that we did. I so appreciate
that. That dressing room, man, you guys saw me through.
Well, yeah. Oof. That's what we do.
I was a wreck for pretty much 2 years.
You know, that's what we do. And we're sisters, and that's, you know.
Well, I just have to say that if that was you, I literally don't remember. It was exactly what I wanted to hear. Because I was like, oh, thank God, I don't have to do anything.
Well, no, I mean, right? But I remember seeing Tennyson. You know, we would, Neely and I, our daughters went to the same preschool, and we, on the BX7, we would pick kids up as we, exactly.
3 hours of sleep after doing your shows.
Oh, my God. It was like Neely would get on with Tennyson strapped into the ergo or whatever, and like ever, depending on what mood she was in, if she wanted to climb the stairs to the bus. I mean, it was like, or walk. After we got off,
wouldn't walk.
Yeah, I remember one day we had gotten off the bus, and the kids tended to run ahead, you know, and and so Ever and Neely and Tennyson were coming, and at one point, one day, it took a while, and I was like, "Is everything okay?" And she's like, "Ever didn't want to walk." She goes, "She sat on the ground." She goes, "And a random stranger just carried my child, just picked Ever up and carried her." Yeah,
I mean, this is like in the depths of. No eight sleep. Shows a week, no sleep. I mean, literally getting 3 hours of sleep a night. The baby's still waking up and still breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. And Ever still not sleeping through the night. And we get off the bus and all of her classmates and all of her friends run to school. And she just, no, and sits down on the ground. And the patience is just gone because I'm just tired. And in that moment, I was like, well, I guess we're not going to school today. And it always was, you know, there were so many parents. We were so blessed to have this community. Somebody would always help. But everyone just ran ahead, and they have to be with their kids. And, you know, it just didn't work out that day. And I just couldn't. And the baby strapped me, and I'm trying to pick her up, and she's dead weight. And some stranger walks up. Must have been a parent. And, oh, you don't feel like walking today. Aren't you supposed to go to school? And I just stopped because I could just tell that I should not be in this equation. And I let the stranger just talk to my child and pick her. And I didn't know. I was like, is she going to let her pick her up? Someday she will. Someday she won't. She picked her up. We walked together. Ever starts laughing, talking to her, smiling. And I just started crying. And I was like, thank you. Thank you. And she was like, I've got kids, and walked away.
That was
isn't that wonderful.
Yeah. That single act of kindness has left such an impression on you, right?
Oh,
incredible.
Every act of kindness, I mean.
Well, and even on me, I mean, I have so much respect for you guys. I mean, I see the struggle, I hear the struggles, and I have no idea what it's like to be in your world to a certain degree, obviously. But I just have so much appreciation. I mean, you talk about the milestones that, you know, neurotypical parents don't really acknowledge or see. But, like, I remember seeing things that Ever would do. Or, like, Elon and I had a conversation last month at a party about this stuffed dog purse, you know. And I said to Kara afterwards, I was like, Kara, she just talked to me for like 4 minutes about this dog purse. She's like, really? I was like, yeah, a whole conversation. Told me about it. Told me those are their headphones to listen to me. Like a whole thing. And so to see the strides, and I know that probably when you're in the depths of it, it's hard to see those moments or the frustrations to see. But those of us on the outside who know your kids, we see the progress they're making, and I've seen Ever and how great she's doing. And Elin is nailing it, and her communication is getting so well. And I've seen where they've come
communication
from.
Communication is getting so well.
So well. That was awful. Her communication is getting better.
Say, actually, right. So we're all good.
Clearly, mine is not. But it's just, you guys are rock stars.
I mean,
and
this
I say
is
this
an isolated moment, but I definitely, not only do we see, but we celebrate every tiny thing because you have to. You have to. It keeps you propelling.
You really do have to celebrate. I remember I was at the beach with some friends, and I actually had left Elin home because she was doing, oh my God, I'm going to blank out on it. She was doing summer school. What is the extended school year?
Oh, yeah.
ESY. So for kids with special needs, if they are going, if the district thinks that they are going to regress by not being in school over the summer, they provide education for your child. Not all districts do it. We are thankfully in a district that does. And so Elon has school Monday through Friday for 6 weeks during the summer half day. And so instead of pulling her out, I left her home with my husband, and I brought my son down to the shore with my friends. And he was like trying to boogie board or something. And I was videotaping it, and I was like, go, Finn! Like, totally celebrating. And my friend, she was like, you're hilarious. She's like, you get so excited. And I was yes. like, I've been conditioned to get so excited. Like, I remember yep. having to be so overt in getting Elon to do things, like yeah. really showing my enthusiasm oh, for yeah. every step, quote unquote, that she took. And so I'm that parent that like yeah. literally screams for everything that every accomplishment my child does, which we'll have to tone back at some point. But
nah.
I feel like that it, like you talked about, you just appreciate uh-huh. those moments. Like it feels, it's so hard won, but the joy it brings is so immense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the same, I was going to say to you, Haven, like, because, you know, I was there. Mm-hmm. I did the same thing whenever I was 7 months old. I was in a new mom's group, and I was sitting in a room every single week with 12 other moms whose kids were born within 2 months of mine, watching what every single one of them was doing, telling myself to stop watching and watching and watching and dying inside. And coming home, I vividly remember one time when my mom was visiting, just having a breakdown. I was also exhausted, not mm-hmm. sleeping at all. Why won't she walk? Why won't she walk? And my mom said, she'll walk when she's ready. And she did. And now at five, looking back, I'm like, who cares about when she did all those things? She's doing them all. Right. And she's doing them all beautifully. And not only that, but as much as for every moment of, why isn't she doing this? Why isn't she doing this? There are three moments of, oh my God, did you just see what she did? Mm-hmm. That far exceeds anything anyone expected her to do. Mm-hmm. And again, is miraculous that mm-hmm. for any kid, but it's just, and yet again, at five, I still see now that she's entered kindergarten, they're no longer babies, the gap like widening at an exponential rate, where now I'm like, okay,
yeah.
Now it begins, you know, because mm-hmm. they were cute babies, and now it begins. But looking back where you are now, I can just, it's so easy to say, and I know it because I was in the depths of it, but she's going to sit up.
She does, and she leans forward for a second and then
yeah.
just.
Oh, yeah. I used to just sit her with pillows on all sides so when she teeter-tottered and toppled over, she wouldn't bang her head.
Yeah. Oh, she has a plagiocephaly, which is the flattening of the yeah. head, right? Which none of us had because we were all stomach sleepers. Yep. But now that back is best, everyone's got flat heads, yep. right? So she has a helmet now too. So yep. it's just like, oh,
it's
Lord.
Super cute. Oh,
Lord. I mean, she's real cute.
She's really cute. So I know. Cute. I'm going to have Denny paint it.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Flowers or something.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
You kind of just touched on this, like you're talking, Neely, you're talking to Haven about, you know, Nova will sit up. What like advice or words of wisdom or encouragement would you give to a parent who's just embarking on like the special needs journey?
I think the best advice that I could give is to do research, not like a Google search, but like find a community in your area that you can plug into with other parents that have gone through it before, because there's no better resource to learn how to advocate for your child than other parents that have gone through it or are going through it,
exactly.
Specifically in your community, in your school district. Like that, once I plugged into that, everything, it's still hard, right? I have what my principal calls the folder of fear with everything. I have like a giant folder of all of our like diagnoses and our IEPs and our everything, right? And I've got one for Nova started now too. But thank God I knew how to do that because I had an incredible advocate. And there's no amount of struggle that's too small that would say you don't need an advocate. Having an advocate by your side, if your child is school aged, is so important. And you don't have them forever, but like our advocate comes with me to my IEP meetings and she sits with me. And if there's something that they try to pull, because no matter how many times you go over those rule books, you can't, we've only been in it a year. I haven't been doing this for 35 years like my advocate has been in my school district, mm-hmm. working with my principal, with other students. Mm-hmm. So I would say learning how to advocate for your kids. And that's like the technical,
right?
Mm-hmm. That's like the technical advice, mm-hmm. which helps with the emotional part because you don't feel alone and you don't feel like you're failing your kids.
And out of control.
And out of control.
And like the advocacy, the paperwork, like alone of having a special needs kid is just so insurmountable.
They do it on purpose.
It's insane.
Right, because the amount, you won't fight as hard.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The amount of work you have to do. So that's really strong advice. I'm like, maybe we should get an advocate.
Yeah. Also, side note, I think your principal should call it the folder of information and tools.
Yeah. Fear, yeah.
That is absurd.
Well, because he's a very nice guy. And he was like, well, the folder of fear. Because when you walk in as a parent, mm-hmm. and you look like you know what you're doing, mm-hmm. then they mm-hmm. know that they can't say no to things. Right. You know, and when you walk in with an advocate on top of it, have somebody in your corner.
Is very important.
Oh yeah,
you know, and
it's like having an agent for your child.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
To negotiate the terms of their education.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of your tax dollars.
I would add to that too, that, you know, even if your child is born today, you're still the parent and you know in your gut, you have to educate yourself and you have to surround yourself with people who have experience and the knowledge and the training. And obviously I'm not going to be my daughter's PT and speech therapist and, you know, advocate and special education teacher, but you get a lot of advice from a lot of different parents and a lot of different teachers and a lot of different professionals, and you take what you need from each of them,
mm-hmm.
because everyone's answer is not your answer. And there were some Facebook groups of families, Down syndrome families, that people just post all the time. And I'm thinking, how do they have time for this? I mean, when are they doing all this posting? And B, I'm not doing enough for my kid. They're going to all these meetings and they're going to all these workshops and this and that. And am I doing enough? Should I be doing more? And I asked a friend specifically, I feel like I'm not doing enough. And she was like, nope, you listen to you. You're doing enough. These sites can be intimidating and whatever doesn't feel right, you don't go there. And that was really excellent advice. Everyone thinks they know what's best for your kid. And I'm not saying don't take advice, because I would be nowhere if I didn't. But you take what feels right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really strong advice. That trust that mama gut, right? Mm-hmm. You like do what's good mm-hmm. for you and your family.
Yeah. Like specifically, when we first got the diagnosis, more than one person, like a doctor and a friend and a professional, they all gave me this. Did you come across this, Haven, this poem, Welcome to Holland, I think it's called, that is supposed to be emotionally helpful and calming or something? And I wanted to tear it up and throw it in a fire. It made me so angry. It was like, having a child with Down syndrome is like you're planning a trip to Italy.
Nope.
And all of a sudden your plane reroutes and you're in Holland. And it's lovely too there. And I was like,
nope.
Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me? It was disgusting to me.
The irony.
And if that is helpful to somebody, fantastic.
Right.
I don't mean to put it down. Whatever helps you through. That was not helpful to me. That I'm going to Italy.
Yeah.
You know, I'm taking my kid.
Yeah, exactly.
And we're going to
Italy. And we're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I liked the video that was like letters to a mother with a child with Down syndrome. And it was from other parents. It's a video montage of like other parents talking about their children and how wonderful they are, and adults with Down syndrome who have become advocates and talking about how happy they are and that they have rich, fulfilling lives and romance and friendships and jobs and all those things. That was that's what I watched. I watched it a lot.
Yeah.
I watched it a lot. Yeah.
Just coming back to those things. I think for me, the piece of advice, and you kind of touched on this, Neely, is that like not feeling I was doing enough. When Ian was really young, I felt like if I didn't spend every moment of the day striving to help her, that I wasn't doing my job as a mother. And I still have moments of that, but I've really been able, and part of it is that she works so hard all day. She goes to school, she gets off the bus, and she immediately starts ABA therapy and home until 7 o'clock at night. Like this child works nonstop. So it allows me on the weekends to be like, you know what? It's okay. It's okay to let her be a kid and to let her thrive and not constantly be trying to pull a moment or growth out of her. And since I've done that, I feel like she has grown so much.
Yeah.
And so I think giving yourself a break as a special needs mom and saying like, it's okay. And it's also okay. And I'm also just learning this because I think self-care as a mother is of the utmost importance. And self-care as a special needs mother is imperative because of the relentlessness of it, both emotionally, intellectually, all of it. Physically, I'm getting to the point where physically, like, having to dress Elin, helping her help herself dress is really physically taxing. She's 6 years old and it's a hard thing to do every day. But we do it. And I remember you reaching out to me, Neely, about a respite weekend. You're like, let's go do this. It was like a respite for mothers with kids with special needs. And I just think that if you're in that situation, you have to take care of yourself. It is, you're in it for the long haul. This isn't, I know for me and maybe my situation will be different. I don't know, but I don't expect my child to leave the coop when she's 18. I don't expect her not to need me. And so it's the long haul, you know, and I need to figure out how I'm going to deal with that and how I'm going to do what's best for me while doing what's best for my kid.
Like they say, you have to put your oxygen mask on first. Right.
I literally said that to Kara like three days ago.
That's a good one.
Talking about it. No, it's true though. It's like this is life, you know? So you have to decide how you can be the best you and be healthy in mind and body and spirit so that you can then be that for your children, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I just think
that's true for all mothers.
Yeah. All mothers, absolutely.
Totally.
But I think you guys are amazing.
Yeah. I think you're amazing.
Oh my God. Y'all are all amazing. My hat's off to you. I know rock stars. You're all rock stars. I don't know how you do it. I know the therapies. I know the schedule. I know the lack of sleep I don't know how you guys do it. And I admire you so much, the way you lead with love and compassion and the way you honor your children and advocate for them. And I just, you're rock stars.
Thank you. Yes. Can I just say, we've talked so much about struggles the struggles and the emotions, but at the same time, I just want to remark on how extraordinary these kids are and the joy and the love and the hard work that they do and how they have grown and what they bring to our lives and how perfect they are. I mean, the things that ever has achieved and where she is now, she blows me away. She is amazing that we just moved our, we moved out of the city specifically for school because the school system was not appropriate for her in Manhattan. And we moved out of state, and she moved away from all of her friends in the same way that you did with Hudson. She had an incredible community, and it broke my heart. I mean, these kids who have known her and loved her since she was born, that she still talks about. And we took her away from that, and she started a new school in kindergarten, walked on the bus. Bye, mommy. Bye, daddy. Went to school, came home. I want to go back to school. I want more school, more school. Has friends who love her and that she loves. She's thriving beyond. I mean, yes, we work hard. Yes, the gap is widening. Yes, she has lots of supports and helps, and we, the future is unknown. But she's extraordinary, and I'm so proud of her. And she teaches us every single day. How to parent and how to love and how to be in the moment and not get wrapped up in minutia, which we still do, of course. But I just wanted people out there listening to know that far overrides the stress and the anxiety and the advocacy that we do every day. Right. It's worth it. And it's wonderful, and they're amazing, and they will teach you more than you ever knew you needed to learn. I'm embarrassed of how little I knew when I gave birth to Ever.
I mean, I think that comes with motherhood in general, but I do feel like Elin is my gift. She has made me a better human, a better member of society. And like you talked about, for all the struggles and the advocacy and all the hard work, the joys when they accomplish something, it's like nothing I've ever felt.
And she's even not huge accomplishments.
No,
tiny things.
The joys. Yeah. I mean, and we'll be places like we were in Hoboken, or no, we were in the Liberty Science Center over the holiday break. And we used to take Elin there all the time. We lived in Hoboken and we were on the stairs. And I was like, we used to bring her here and work going up and down the stairs.
Yeah.
And I was like, now she's just running up and down the stairs like it's nothing, you know, and just like reliving those joys. Oh gosh, something just popped into my head about that. You're talking about Elin works harder than anybody I know. She is the hardest working person I know. And I admire her so much for that. They really are extraordinary humans. So thank you so much for touching on that. Because it is really easy to go down the...
It is.
Yeah. It's not negativity. It's honesty.
Yeah.
It is what it is. But
But it's not all pain.
It's not all pain. Oh my gosh.
We were at a birthday party for one of Ever's classmates a couple weeks ago. And we had gone to the bathroom or something. I can't remember. We went to look at something. So when we came back into the room, the kids were all seated around a long table and they had started on an art project. So Ever kind of made her entrance. And the kids all turned around. One of them went, "Hey, Ever's here. You guys, Ever's here." And their faces lit up. And they're like, "Ever, come sit with me." They're fighting over who gets to sit next to her. And she just walks on in, "Hi," with her big smile. And so it just... I wanted to cry.
It was joy.
Joy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, and the victory for us was that we got invited to a birthday party this year, which was a humongous victory. Because for Hudson, it's just, you know, the friendships are always going to be a little more challenging. And as a parent, you just want your kid to have that,
of course,
that find that friend. And what's great is that he's found friends that he has occupational therapy with in school that are in his class,
so
which
his
is
OT
really
buddy.
Neat. Yeah, it's like his OT buddy and
it.
Like they go bowling, you know, things like that. But that's it was such a huge victory that just I think a lot of people take for granted, like, oh, we've got another birthday party this week. And I'm like, we got invited to a birthday party.
<That's awesome.
laughs> I have to go buy a present. I'm so excited. And I wouldn't change anything about my kids, nothing. And as I was getting ready to leave, Denny piled all the kids in the car to take me to the train to come here this morning. And before we were going, Hudson and Nova, Nova was doing tummy time on the rug and Hudson was laying down with her and she's just grabbing at his face and he's giving her kisses and stuff. And I remember one of the other things I was reading was that siblings who have siblings of children with special needs grow up to be more compassionate, mm-hmm. more loving, more understanding. And I thought, you know, it's really kind of a gift to our kids' siblings as well, that we have no idea like what our kids are going to grow up to accomplish, but it was,
yeah. That is the power of inclusion.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So the joys and the struggles, all of it. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your experiences.
And thank you, Kara, for, you know, leading the charge and opening up on this episode.
It's a hard thing to talk about, but I'm so glad we did it.
All three of you, thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Mama's Talkin' Loud. Special shout outs to Rachel Spencer Hewitt for our fabulous graphic, Kristen Anderson Lopez, Bobby Lopez, and Justin Ward Weber for our super theme song,
our producer Dori Berenstein, and of course the Broadway Podcast Network for bringing us to you. Have a good one.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.